This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com. Hello and welcome to the Fun Kids Book Club podcast. I've got loads of stuff on today's show, including a chat with Andy Stanton, a chat with Harry Hill, and a reading from the brand new Tracy Beaker book. But first, it's my book trivia question. Today's is a bit different. I want to know this. Who do you think has sold more books, Jacqueline Wilson or David Walliams? Both very popular, but who is the most popular? I'll tell you at the end of the show. First up, let's find out what happened when Anna Louise spoke to Andy Stanton.
You're listening to The Club with me, Anna Louise, here on Fun Kids, and I'm with award-winning author Andy Stanton. Hi, Andy.
Hello, how are you?
Really well, thank you. Now, you've got a brand new series coming out called The Paninis of Pompeii. Now, I love a panini, but what's different about a panini from Pompeii?
Well, firstly, a panini from Pompeii doesn't refer to a sandwich. It refers to a person, because I've written this kid's book about a family called the Paninis, and that's because I sort of just think it's a funny word, and also it's a sort of it's a nonsense word. We've got a merchant called Caecilius Panini. He's got a wife called Vesuvius. They've got a son called Phileas. They've got a dog called Barcus Wufferinicum.
It's loads of
mucking about with sort of old Roman and Pompeian type ideas.
What inspired this crazy new series, Andy?
When I was at school, I had to study Latin for a year. You could study it longer, but I gave it up as soon as I could because I hated it. We just had a really uninspiring teacher. And why would you want to learn Latin?
Oh, it's tricky, really tricky.
And, you know, unless you want to be a lawyer or something, right? Or just a show off. So they had this textbook, and the whole textbook was all about ancient Pompeii. And there was apparently a merchant called Caecilius. And years later, you were taught Latin through these characters. Years later, I just thought it would be really funny to just make a complete remixed, surreal version of what I remember from that book. So I remember Caecilius. To me, that's a funny name. So I turned Caecilius from a merchant into a fart merchant. In my books, he buys and sells farts down the market.
Does he have bottle them up?
It's never really explained. I really like not explaining lots of things in my books so that kids just go, huh? How can you do that? Because there's bits where they sort of hold a fart and kids go, how is he holding a fart? You just go, I don't know, mate, just is. And then, so I sort of already turned Caecilius into a fart merchant. And then the mountain that blew up, the volcano that exploded and destroyed Pompeii was Vesuvius. Mm. Well, I thought, I'll just call Caecilius' wife Vesuvius. I want to remix everything. Oh. So she's Vesuvius. And then they're looking out the window going, I wonder what that massive volcano next door to the town is, mother. I don't know, replied Vesuvius. No one knows the name of it. So what I'm trying to do is just take all the kind of realities from that time and scramble them with the ultimate aim of making children's heads explode with happiness.
So what do you do if you're like, right, I'm going to have a writing day on Thursday? You sit down at your desk and then you just hit a writer's block and you've got no ideas and nothing is coming to you.
Well, that's why you need Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
So you go,
I'm going to write on Thursday. That means I need to write rubbish on Monday, I need to write rubbish on Tuesday, I need to write rubbish on Wednesday, and that's going to be so painful because by then I'm going, I can't do it at all.
And then
if you're lucky and you stick at it, you get some good stuff on Thursday. So yeah, that's what you do is you write even when it's hard, or you try and do something, even just sit at the desk and try. It doesn't matter if you don't really produce anything. So long as your brain is hurting with the effort of it, you'll open up those floodgates eventually. So now and again, you get lucky and you just get something, bang, out of the starting hatch. But, you know, that's rarer.
What advice would you give to anyone listening who really wants to be an author and loves writing but just doesn't know how to get into the industry?
First thing you've got to do is write something. You don't even look at getting into the industry until you've written something. So we're talking about writing, I think. I think, firstly, if you want to write, read. Read. Read everything you can get your hands on that interests you. Even bad books will teach you what you don't want to write.
That's interesting.
Good books will inspire you further. the other thing I'd say is just get to the end of the first draft. That's always my most important thing. It does, you know, if you've got an idea for a story and you don't really know where it's going and you're getting stuck, don't worry, just keep getting it there. Get it to the end, whatever the end is that you've got in mind. Then you can go back and edit it and make it better. But get there whether it's working well or not. You can decide whether it's rubbish later. If you really can't think of, you only need one idea to get going, and then you see where it goes. But I got lucky with Mr. Gum because I invented a villain, and I just started with a villain. And you know what? If you start by inventing a villain, something is going to happen. Mm. Villains make stories happen. They're great engines, because a villain always wants something, or to stop something, or to, you know, or to get something, or to muck something up. And then you've got a story happening. Then you go, okay, something's going on. I better have a hero to try and fight the villain. Now, you know, that's a good way to start.
Well, if you've got a villain, he's got to be stopped, hasn't he?
Well, exactly, yeah.
Andy, thank you so much. Where can we get our hands on the brand new series, The Paninis of Pompeii?
Well, the first one is out right now, and it should be available in all good bookshops and some terrible bookshops. And I'm sure it's online as well.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, bye.
Thank you very much to Anna, Louise and Andy Stanton. Next up, it's time to welcome Imogen to the studio.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
You've got a beautiful pile of books in front of you.
I do, and two of which, are kind of spooky themed, because we've just had Halloween.
We have.
Just a couple of days ago. And so the first one of my picks is a... The first one of my picks is Tales of Tricks and Treats by Enid Blyton.
Oh, lovely.
Now, Enid Blyton, you know, is an absolute legend in the writing sphere. She sold over 500 million copies of her books.
Wow.
And she's written over 700 books and 2,000 short stories. And 30 of those short stories are in this kind of anthology book with... all about scary, spooky things, fairies, witches, giants, magical tales, goblins, all sorts of fun-filled, jam-packed, loads of stories. And they're really, like, they're short and sharp and witty and wonderful. And if you want just a little treat of only a few pages...
Yeah, nice and easy to read.
So easy. Then this is the book for you. If you're not a huge fan of reading... these are really digestible, because you can just flick through one a night, bish bash bosh, and you'll do it.
Enid Blyton is an excellent starter kind of book, isn't she?
Yeah, she's wonderful. And yeah, definitely a great one for this Halloween-y, spooky, festive-y period.
Lovely stuff. What do you have next?
Next, I have, talking of Jacqueline Wilson quite a lot on this book club, it's Jacqueline Wilson, and it's We Are the Beaker Girls.
Now, I read the last book in this series, which was about Tracy and her daughter. It was told from her daughter's point of view.
Jess,
and now I
yes.
believe they have moved to the seaside to a little antiques place called the Dumping Ground, right?
Yes. So now Jess and Tracy live above the Dumping Ground. Not the Dumping Ground that Tracy grew up in.
No.
But yeah, it's a seaside antique shop. And they live alongside Flo, who's the owner, and Alfie, their dog. Now, in this book, Jess is looking for a new boyfriend for her mum. She wants to do a bit of matchmaking, but also she's got quite big problems of her own, because she's being picked on by a local kid who's got it a bit in for her, unfortunately. Things never do run smooth with the Beaker girls.
They don't, do they? No.
No, but when Jess uncovers the truth about her new sworn enemy, things become a little bit more complicated.
If you love your Jacqueline Wilson and Tracy Beaker, well, this is the perfect book for you.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to find out what happens next to Tracy and Jess, and kind of have some, I've sometimes wondered, Bex, what Tracy's childhood and her growing up in the foster care system and things, that sort of impact that has on Jess.
Yeah, sure.
And that's kind of explored a bit in this book, which is really, really interesting, especially as like the care system was a huge, huge part of Tracy's life. And kind of the books gave us a bit of a glimpse into it.
And one of the few books that did, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And this is a really fascinating book that kind of carries on from all of that. And of course, it's wonderful. And it has the beautiful illustrations by Nick Sharratt that we all love. So if you love Jacqueline Wilson, you're going to read this anyway. If you love Tracy Beaker, you're going to read this anyway. If you love books, just give it a go.
Give it a go, yeah. You don't have to have read the last ones, I think. You can just delve straight in.
Yeah, dive in.
And what is the final beautiful book you have here in front of you?
The final book is A World Full of Spooky Stories, 50 Tales to Make Your Spine Tingle.
It's a big one, isn't it?
It is a big one. It's written by Angela McAllister and it's beautifully illustrated by Madalena Andronich. And this is, as the title suggests, a book of 50 spooky tales from all over the world. So we have stories from Russia, we have stories from South America, we have stories from India, and they're all kind of scary, spooky little, almost fairy tale-y folk stories that you probably won't have heard of before because they're from all around the world and they were kind of spoken by word of mouth, passed down through generations, and they've just been put in this book for your lovely reading pleasure.
And really nicely illustrated as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they're gorgeous and we love a little illustration,
love an illustration.
On the book club. And yeah, they're kind of split up from wood stories to castle stories to mountain path stories to farm and field to strangers knocking at the door, enchanted places, all sorts. And there's, yeah, as I said, stories from all around the world, something to dive into. You will adore
also
this book.
That's a good gift book as well, isn't it? I'm just eyeing that up as we speak. I'm like, oh,
I know, I saw you
book.
Eyeing it up.
Yeah.
This goes missing, Bex. I know who to come to.
Absolutely. Come and look in my bag for that. Brilliant. That is a really, really lovely book as well. Thank you, Imogen. Three great picks this week.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Next up, we are going to have a little chat with Harry Hill. This is Bex in the club, and I'm joined by the author and comedian Harry Hill. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Good. Yeah.
Are you super busy at the moment?
Well, I've just recorded, this might be of interest to your listeners, the Junior Bake Off is coming back to Channel 4.
That is not just interesting to listeners, but also to me as well, personally.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I spent 3 weeks in the summer in a tent with the with 20 young bakers.
20?
Well, there were two groups of 10.
Right, okay.
They whittled down the first 10 to 5 and the second 10 to 5, and then it's 5 versus 5 that whittled till we get the baker. So that was a lot of fun.
And how much cake did you eat?
Well, because I'm the host, there is no point in the format for the host to eat any cake.
Yeah,
right? So it's basically whatever you can grab.
Yeah, I do a smash and grab. Like, obviously after they've been judged, but I would have grabbed pretty much everything I possibly could.
Yeah, well, that's basically what I did. You know, there's that bit where they say, come and enjoy each other's, you know, after they've been marked on the table at the front.
Oh, do they share it round?
So they all pile in and help themselves. You know, the idea being that they can taste the best, you know, the thing that won and the thing that, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And so I would go in there and then there's another bit at the end after the showstopper bit where you don't see it. They edit this out of the TV show where the host takes the plate that they've just been trying this, you know. So
yeah.
So I would take the plate and I'd have to go and swap it with a clean plate. So as walking over, I would eat what was left on the plate.
I was going to say, so you're doing the job of a waiter, but actually it's quite a nice
waiter's job. Yeah, it's like being a glorified waiter.
Yeah, yeah, but with extra cake. Right, so we should probably talk about your brand new book,
yes.
I suppose.
So I've been doing that, and of course, I have this new book out.
It's the third book in the Matt Mill series.
It is the third one, yeah.
And first of all, I loved it. I've read it and loved it. But Matt is just a lovely character. Like, in this book, he's so gracious
and so kind.
He's based
on me. That's why he's so lovely.
Sure, yeah, that's what it is.
Because my real name is Matt. You know, some people may know that.
So tell us a little bit about what happens to Matt in the book.
So the first one, he is, he enters show business for the first time. And he enters a big TV talent competition. Then the second one, he's sort of dealing with his fame, isn't he?
Yes.
And trying to maintain it. And in the third one, we join him some months after his peak.
He's on a bit of a downer.
He's on this on Skid Row.
Yeah, he really is. He feels like he's over before he's turned 40. He's 13, right? And he's like, everything's done now. Yeah. That's me. That's
my life is over. And he lives in rural Kent, so there's very few opportunities for a stand-up comedian. I can vouch for that because that's where I grew up.
Right.
And so he's desperate for gigs. And then his manager, Kitty Hope, comes up with a brilliant plan. Should we talk about that? Give that away? Yes.
Absolutely,
The main bulk of the book is him going up to the Edinburgh Festival, the fringe festivals. So if you've never been, and I think you have been.
I've definitely been, yeah.
For anyone listening who hasn't been, it's just thousands of shows.
It's the most fun place.
And it's not just stand-up comedians, it's plays, serious plays and singing and people on stilts and...
It's just madness for a month, isn't it, really?
And and unlike a lot of festivals, so if you're going to want to appear on the stage at Glastonbury, someone has to ask you.
Yes.
Edinburgh, anyone can go. All you have to do is fill out the form and pay the money. This reflects my first experience in Edinburgh, so I'd never even been up. And I wrote this comedy play.
Okay.
And we booked this venue without seeing it, and it was a leisure centre.
So you could get
a
free swim? Outskirts.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about it was actually the French fries.
Oh, which is also in the book. Yeah. Is this book basically just your diary then? Is that what it is?
A lot of it is. You know, I was at that time sticking up my own posters, so I would go out with
doing all the flyering. So in the book, Matt also has a new kid in school to make
friends
with.
A rival, yeah. Yes, now this is the real jeopardy, I suppose, because there's a new boy arrives, and he turns out to be funnier.
Mm, which, for a comedian, very difficult to deal with, surely.
Yeah.
But the thing is with Matt, like, he takes a little while, but he does understand that for the greater good, for the good of the show, he's got to accept that maybe this time he's not the star.
He's not the headliner. He swallows it,
And that's hard.
You know, if you want to be a comedian, you're on a bill with other people. Some nights you'll be the funniest one, or you'll go best, and other nights you won't, because the audience is always different.
I do like, in the book, you talk about comedy, like, you talk about the business of it that probably kids don't get to hear about from anywhere else. The idea of, like, you know, of that kind of stuff, of working on the show, of getting better, or flyering, and, like, the grubby bits behind the scenes.
Sure, yeah.
It is cool.
Yeah, it's because I'm really, just still really interested in it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the sort of thing that you never actually get the hang of. You never completely master it, so... even now, you get nights where, I get nights where I'm thinking I could have done that better, or how would I have improved on that? So, it's endlessly fascinating, actually, stand-up comedy.
So what's next for Matt? Does he have, like, a 5-year plan? Does he have a little ambition or an aim you reckon he's going to get
after
to?
After this,
yeah.
Well, I don't have any plans to write another one.
Okay.
Ooh. This might, it might be the...
What? Have I just uncovered an exclusive? What?
It might not be. At the end of this, well, it says, that's all from him, good night.
Which is a slightly...
For now. Normally I say, that's all from him for now anyway, good night.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. But I do have a few other ideas for him. And then the other idea I had was possibly that we should pursue Kitty Hope's comedy agency.
I mean, Kitty is fascinating. She's an absolute boss. Mm. She's the school... a school agent. I mean, schools don't tend to have agents.
Yeah.
But she gets more people on the books as the days go by.
That's right.
And was her grandfather, like, the manager of the Palladium and that kind
of thing? That's right, Bernie Hopestein.
If there's a spin-off, there, that would be lovely. I also love the little tie-in, the Wet Fizz Awards, the Perry Award, that kind of thing. Like, it must be nice to put everything you know about comedy into a book and just subvert it a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of fun writing it, I must say. You know.
So this brings me on. I've made a little Edinburgh quiz for you.
Oh, okay, great.
Just 5 questions, just to see, like, just...
I mean, 5 questions.
Just 5 questions. I'm not going to judge you too heavily, but I will.
Right.
You know, I will think, I will think less of you, to be honest. Okay. I think you'll get these. I think you'll be okay. Just to judge your Edinburgh fringe credentials. Can you name... can you give me some other names for the Perrier Awards?
Is it the Foster's...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one.
Yeah. That's fine. I just wanted one, but the panic in your eyes was interesting.
I don't know what it is now. What is it now? Is it still Foster's?
I think it's the Eddies now. They've just got rid of all of that. When did the Edinburgh Fringe begin? Was it 1946, 47, or 48?
I got an idea. It's 47, but I don't know.
It is 47.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes. This is very good. If you were to watch every single show on at the Fringe, how long would it take you?
God.
I can give you multiple choice if you'd like.
Okay, yeah.
Is it 5 years, 12 months, or a decade?
12 months.
5 years.
5 years.
Apparently,
wow.
Yeah, it's 30,000 shows, and somebody's done the maths already,
yeah,
on that.
Great.
Can you name some winners for best show?
Best show.
Best show.
What for the? Well, you mean like the
Perry? Yeah. Any winners?
Yeah. Al Murray.
Yep.
Lano and Woodley.
Okay, that's a niche reference.
They beat me.
Right.
No one's ever heard of them. They were an Australian duo. John Cairns.
Two more.
Oh gosh, who won it this year? Jordan Brooks.
Yeah,
won it this year. Not.
I'll take a best new.
Did Frank Skinner win it? No.
I feel like he did. I'm going to say yes. I think he did. Yeah, why not?
It's best not to win it. In many ways, it's best not to win it because then you have all the expectation.
And then you can still put it on your poster, can't you? Nominated for the award.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably pretty good.
No one, you know, on the whole, no one remembers the winners.
Is that what you tell yourself? And finally, apart from comedy, can you name three of the categories of show in the Fringe programme?
Three of the categories?
Yeah. When you're looking for what shows to go and see.
Oh, I don't know. Drama.
Yeah, that'll do. Yeah.
Comedy, musical. I don't know.
Yeah, that's that's it. Yeah. Yeah, children's dance. Or is I've written here dance, etc. Events, exhibitions, yeah. So okay. I'll take drama.
Right.
Brilliant stuff. And so we should say that Matt Mills is out right now.
It's Matt Mills on tour.
On tour. It's the green one, not the blue or the red one.
It's the green one, yeah. Ask for the green one.
Ask for the green Matt Mills book. They'll know exactly what you mean straight away. Fab. Harry, thank you so much for chatting to us.
It's lovely to talk to you.
Perfect. Thanks. Thank you very much to Harry Hill for coming by the Fun Kids studio. Now, we did mention that Jacqueline Wilson has a new book out in the Tracy Beaker series, and here is a reading of it. From Sheridan Smith.
Three cones, please. All with chocolate flakes. One with chocolate sauce, too. One with strawberry and one with sprinkles. The ice cream man smiled at me. All for you, Jess? Yes. Yum, yum, yum. It was our little joke. Of course I wasn't going to eat them all. There was one for my mum, one for Flo and one for me. We treat ourselves whenever we make a big sale in our shop. Well, it's really Flo's shop, but we moved in a month ago and my mum has been in charge of the stock and we've had ice cream 7 times. And today we'd made an absolutely huge sale. It had been a quiet morning. Flo was sitting on her old chintz sofa, balancing a bowl of water on her lap and gently cleaning a china crinoline lady with an old toothbrush. Mum was on her knees at the back, sticking scraps onto a wooden stool to make it look pretty. I was curled up on a faded velvet chair with my dog, Alfie, snoozing on a cushion at my feet. I was meant to be doing some horrible sums in my notebook. Mary is worried that I've missed so much school. She was my teacher when we lived on the Duke Estate in London. I still sometimes forget and call her Miss Oliver. I like her, but I wish she wouldn't keep sending me homework. I especially wish she wouldn't set me problems. My problem is I can't do the problems. I was doodling instead, drawing lots of little cartoon Alfies. I drew him fast asleep, wide awake, running crazily, jumping for a ball, lying on his back to be tickled. I even drew him having a wee. I love Alfie so much, almost as much as my mum. Do you know my mum, Tracy Beaker? Everyone knew her when we lived in Marlborough Tower. Heaps of people already know her here in Cooksey. She's that kind of person.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much to Andy Stanton, to Harry Hill, to Sheridan Smith, and to Imogen for recommending some amazing books this week. Just time to recap my book trivia question. Who has sold more books? Is it Jacqueline Wilson or David Walliams? Well, I know a lot of people would think David Walliams because he's written quite a lot of books, but it's Jacqueline Wilson. She has sold about 40 million copies of her books in the UK alone. So well done her. That is pretty much it from me today in the Book Club podcast. I'll be back super duper soon. Make sure to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast from. Bye. So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.